Everybody's okay with the agenda? We'll accept it?
Yep. And we just got it.
Okay. Now, election of the chair. That's me.
Second one has been adoption of the minutes, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, that's... Yeah, so we've all had the minutes. They're online. Any changes to the minutes? Anybody? No, everything's good. Okay, motion to adopt. We're good.
The agenda, Robin, I just wanted to give a brief update on the Reese Creek Culvert project. Just so everyone's in great time. I know you're very much aware of it. Good enough.
Yeah, okay.
And your new business?
Yeah. Okay. I actually got a whole bunch of topics under new business, and that's one of them. Yeah.
Well, so we should add those. So if the agenda up there, you can.
Okay. Okay. Let's do that. So, adoption of the agenda. Okay, new business. The Brand Festival. I'm doing a couple of tours, April 7th, 8th. We can talk about that. I guess this is for you, Brandy. Aerosmith Naturalist is having the AGM for BC Nature, May 9th to 12th. We've got some Heritage Forest tours on that. We can talk about that. There's some very orange water coming out of, what it is. Mrs. Brown had a salmon rearing pond, kind of a concrete pond, kind of right in behind the Crown Mansion. Mm-hmm. And it looks like there's probably a metal pipe in there. Because downstream of that little reservoir, the waters and the substrate on the bottom is bright orange.
Hmm.
So we can talk about that. Let's see. There. And we've got the slump on business arising from the minutes. So we're good there. New business. And then there's just housekeeping items. Those are just a random kind of a thing. We've got a few things in there. Oh, I think we're okay. Good, Brandy? Okay. Okay, election of the chair. Is anybody wanting to be the chair?
Tom.
I think you do, Rachel.
I think you're really, really good at it, Tom.
Well, all right, never take. I'm happy to continue. But if either one of you were just red hot.
I don't concentrate well enough, you know that.
You're it.
Well, I don't know that. You can concentrate.
Okay, that's fine. So, Tom accepts chair. Do we vote on that, or?
It'll be a good idea.
Okay, do we make a motion to that, or?
Well, there's a motion here that the Town of Colton Beach Heritage Forest Commission elect Tom Whitfield as chair for the 2024,
I guess. Motion to adopt. Okay. Accepted. Tom. Okay, business arriving in a minute. So you are here, Matt. Oliver Watson and I, we spent quite a bit of time on this. We've met in the forest and this kind of stuff. The idea was the old way was there was a map, like an aerial photograph, which is confusing as heck if you're not used to looking at aerial photographs, right? And the beach piece itself wasn't properly delineated. There was some trail stuff that wasn't properly delineated on the aerial photograph. So I thought, well, let's go with the same map on the you are here sign as what we use on the brochure.
Uh-huh.
Right? Then there's no confusion. Because what I noticed is people will take the brochure out of the info box and then leave them all folded up, just showing the map in the info box when they leave the forest.
Uh-huh.
So it occurs to me, people are using that as the map. And if we have just the you are here notifications, I think it's going to help. Plus, Crown Mansion gets a little upset when people cut through. So I've added a private property delineation there so people are clear. So I think that's going to work.
Okay.
And I think Oliver has sent them off to either Scott or Outfit in Nanaimo. I think it was going to be Scott. And so anyway, after 3 long years, I think we're going to get the signs in the ground.
They're fabricated and they're going in Monday.
Yep. Woo-hoo.
Wow. Way to go.
That's all we're
good. Way to go. Well, that's really good. And that's our logo, by the way, for the Brown Property Preservation Society, for anybody that hasn't kind of seen that. So that's fantastic. And I just sent excellent photography to Bernie, actually just yesterday, of perhaps some new photographs that she might like to use for the brochure. She's quite excited about that. They're excellent. It's a local photographer, Deborah Freeman. And so she has given me a number of photographs to use. And so the brochure is getting really close to being completed as well. That's great about those signs. Management plan. Ooh.
Yep, so the update on that, last time we met, we realized we need to do it. So council, there have been two updates to the management plan. One in 2020 or 2021, I don't remember the exact date, it was the first set round of revisions. That went to council and those were approved. And then there's a second round of revisions that we were all in agreement with, but council never approved them. So when Brandy and I looked into it, and thank goodness Brandy returned because now this is actually going to get done.
Okay. And we are
so grateful. Basically, that the second round of revisions, and they're minor, but we can't just kind of drop them in casually. So those need to go to council in a memo for council to approve those revisions. And then we can have the plan finalized.
Was there something wrong with them that they wouldn't approve them, or it just didn't get through the panels?
No, it's a matter. So council adopted their revisions in, I think it would have been late in the year, Tom. You can probably remember this.
November of 2022.
Yeah, so they were adopted in November, and then there's a few other little things that were added by Tom and you guys, like just to clarify a few things. But that round of revisions never went to council. So the management plan as it sits right now is after round revision one, because council never authorized the second revision. I don't see any issue with it, but
that was all the fire sport stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
The date on that was February 28th,
2023, right.
So a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's all the fire sport stuff in red, right? These are all the new revisions. Okay, because I was asking you last year about whether that stuff was actually in place, and we thought it was, so apparently it was not.
And I thought it was, because I was referring to the November resolution, but then that was just before the other round of revisions, and February 28th, so,
okay.
It's really a housekeeping. Because the Acres Press already agreed to those revisions.
Yeah,
the prescription.
They did.
So the only party that hasn't agreed is the town, officially.
Okay. All right.
So they got me on. There has been progress, but it's just identified the last hurdle to be completed.
Do we need to make a new motion then to Mayor and Council to adopt the fire smart changes?
I think so. I think this group endorsed those changes, correct?
We did. And CLT did.
Yeah, correct. So that motion just needs to go to council. So the previous motion from the Heritage Sports Commission goes to council. They endorsed it. So I don't think it's a new motion is required.
Okay. When do we think that'll get done?
Because
it's been a year now.
That's right. There's a lot, thanks for your patience. There's a lot of really, pressing things, and it's not the fact that the plan hasn't officially been endorsed isn't holding back any action, right? You know, so it hasn't been at the top of the priority list. And I apologize, I have to be upfront about that, though, that there's some things that are very time sensitive that staff are working on. So we will try to get done.
Can I put it forward under my report and just do that?
Sure.
And then
that would save a report.
That would save a report. If I just put the motions forward and provided the information to staff.
Yeah, maybe you and I can just work on that motion.
Sure.
Make sure it's clear and refresh the right date, and that'd
be great.
Time to wrap it on.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Fabulous. Thanks, Ed.
Well, that would be March 13th is the next meeting, because it'll be too late for this meeting.
Okay. March 13th. Okay. I just skipped ahead. Heritage Trail and the tree planting. Is there anything going on with the walking trail? I have people asking me about that walking trail along Hemsworth all the time. It's been on the agenda for
2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. For us, it's resources because we're intending to do the work internally. So we're putting in fiber optic for our water system at the same time. Once we've disturbed the soil, then we put that path. So it's a matter of getting the resources. We were hoping to do it last summer, and we ended up having some water main issues that we ended up dealing with for weeks instead. So it is in our work time for this year, and it's just, if nothing more pressing, like a large water main break again happens, then we'll get it done.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
So those minor trees that was growing into the water main, into the storm pipe, I have a piece of the storm pipe on my windowsill, and all you can see is roots. It's just like a big root ball all the way.
Sounds like the drainage from my house.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Where was that?
That was right by Hemsworth. It's around in that area. It's just on someone's property line, they planted some cedars, and then there's a couple other trees.
Yeah, and the water.
Yeah. Finally, were a big issue.
Go for the water.
So then trying to not disturb the water, like it was hard work getting in there and cutting it all apart without damaging the water main type of thing, because there was a ring around it.
You remember what you saw at my place? I was showing you those
trees
from the cedar tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really an impressive tree, what they can do.
Determined date.
So is the town looking for grant money? Because that was always the thing in the past, was grant applications.
For this walking trail?
For the walking trail.
It's always on that radar, whether the grant comes out that's appropriate. Like cost-wise, it's in that probably $50,000 range, so we're just looking for a grant around that, rather than spending it, like getting a $50,000 grant for this when it's up to $500,000, so we try to go to the maximum grant amount, if that makes sense. So we're always looking, for sure.
Okay. But are you waiting for grant money to proceed?
No.
Oh, I see. Okay. 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 Thank you. Heritage Forest Fire Plan. Well, Fire Smart. So, Luke had sent around the questionnaire, right? Which is quite excellent, actually. And there was an interactive part to that at the bottom that I thought was quite good, right? Met with the Fire Smart team and Shinjini and Sue and Cormac. That was just 2 weeks ago, I guess. We had a really good meeting, and then we spent a lot of time in the Heritage Forest afterwards. I think they were quite impressed with, you know, what we've done, like, because we've done a lot of stuff in there over the last couple of years, right? Which is completely fire smart techniques and approaches and measurements and all that kind of stuff. Wrote a summary of the steps that we've taken. There was talk about a sign for the Heritage Forest, and so I wrote a bunch of bullets, like a summary of the steps that we've taken, sent that off to Shinjini and the consultants and Peter. And there's talk of a fire smart sign, basically, perhaps going in over by the Hemsworth Gate. Peter was talking about maybe around the kiosk area somewhere.
And so that's kind of where it stands. I think Shenzhen is kind of spearheading that. And it's probably a good idea, like as far as like over by the Hemsworth side where we did all that work, I would say John Q. Public would walk by that and not really recognize what happened there. So it seemed like it was probably a good idea to put some signage up and just let people know that, hey, we're on it, basically.
And that was to partly alleviate people's worries about the chip trail, because some people think it's a fire hazard and they're not realizing how much moisture it's holding.
No. It was the 30-meter zone in behind the 7-hose long palm drive.
Okay. Yeah.
Where we took all the dead trees down, all the branches out, all the dead and shrubs. It was 2 years to do it. I hauled all the dead branches out, shipped them at roadside to the town guys. We took all the lower live limbs up to about 5 feet. It took us a couple of years to do that. It was a lot of work. And then we went around the entire heritage forest and dragged all of the branch accumulations from the windrow that's been happening more, and dragged all of the accumulations out to the chippers at roadside, chipped them, took it away. So we did the whole course. And it's probably going to be an every 3 year or you know, whatever kind of event. Mobilize volunteers, get the town guys there with the chipper, because we are getting stronger winter storm. That's right. More stuff coming down. So we're doing what we can, basically.
So the location of the sign, there was some discussion of putting it in the grassy meadow area.
Yeah, there. And so again, that kind of pushed that back to Shenzhen. Like, there's some consultants hired by the town. Shenzhen has a role in this kind of thing, and I didn't see myself as being the guy to be designing fire smart signs, quite frankly, right? There's discussion of, you know, maybe a broader discussion on the sign in the kiosk, and then maybe a more specific sign over by the Hemsworth Lane about this is what you're looking at, sort of thing. So we'll see what Peter, Shenzhen, and the consultants come up with. Right? That's kind of where we left it. But it's a good idea in terms of public education and that kind of stuff, right? And those consultants seem to be really on the ball, right? They were very good.
One of them didn't say a thing.
Well, yeah, right.
He didn't say a thing the whole time. Exactly, the great authority, but that was it.
I suspect he was junior and didn't.
Exactly. I think so too, yeah. But his training wheels still.
He loosened up in the forest.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Got a good shot. Okay, so FireSmart. So lots going on with FireSmart, basically. Okay, so that's good. The tree bylaw.
Coming back to a committee of the whole, probably by June.
Okay, so by June. And what we discussed was that there's kind of a set of standards that's different than what's being proposed in the tree bylaw, and whether there might be just even a one-liner. The tree bylaw doesn't necessarily apply to the heritage forest. That's where we left it a couple meetings ago. Because it is very specific. Like, it's a lot about danger trees, and it's just a different philosophy, as opposed to we're trying to hang on to wildlife trees in the heritage forest, stuff like that. So that would be...
That would be the input that you could...
Yeah, so, Tom, just to clarify, the bylaw doesn't apply to town-owned land. Right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't apply to... were done by a town agent on town plan. So I don't think it's necessary to, you know, single out a specific part of town land when we have that blanket statement. But, you know, once again, like Councilor Scooby said, that's the type of input, you know, sure, we can make some revisions. It's going to improve people.
Would people know that? Because that's first, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, the bylaw is fairly dense. and there's aspects of the bylaw that you might not pick up on first read. You know, to me, it's pretty apparent. Okay, it's the exception. That's usually what I look for when I first look at a bylaw, but that's your job. Exactly.
Well, it's probably aimed at, like, builders and people wishing to take down a tree for some reason, that sort of thing.
Yeah, the big exceptions are it does not apply to provincial land, federal land, or municipally owned land, whereas it's done being done by town agents.
So, like,
it's so with town authorization. So the reason is that caveat is that you don't have the right to go and remove a tree on town land because you don't like the tree in front of your house, right? So clearly the tree bylaw and all other regulations don't apply to that. So it's only by.
So would the golf course be another example?
If the town authorizes it, then yeah, the tree bylaw wouldn't apply.
Would not apply.
If the town endorses the tree removal, then it wouldn't apply to it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit confusing.
Yeah. And those lease situations are more confusing.
Okay. Well, anyway, that was what we were proposing, is because it's just, like, in reading the bylaws, like, it's quite different than what we've got going on in the Conservation Covenant and the Management Plan, and just some kind of clarity, maybe?
Yeah. Well, we can all take another look at the bylaw and then see, you know, if you still think it's necessary, then that would be reasonable input from either the commission or yourself personally, however you wanted to.
Okay. So when will that be reviewed then?
It's supposed to be before June or by quarter two, kind of.
What we're hoping to do, slight tangent, but very related, is we're trying to get an update to our tree canopy assessment done so that people know what happened the last time we touched our canopy and trees that we gained, right? So we're looking at consultants right now and hopefully they'll get that worked out soon. If it's going to take too long, we're going to go ahead and schedule the meeting anyway without the benefit of that information, but that's why the data is somewhat in flux, because if the consultant says, oh, we'll have it done, you know, mid-May, then we're not going to have a June meeting because we won't have had time to review it, right? So stay tuned, but it will be at a reasonable time.
Okay, because our next meeting is in May.
Yeah, so that would be time.
Okay, so let's just say that. Okay, then the new urban forest management plan, the only thing there is, well, we've got an urban forest management plan, maybe it's a draft or something, but the heritage forest isn't mentioned in the plan, like, not even once. And it just seemed like an oversight on a grand scale of a 50-acre forest in the middle of town not being referred to at all in the management plan. How do we deal with that?
It's on the schedule for a few, but not for a few years.
Not for a few years?
Yeah. And you know, I feel like I'm just like the bad news bearer here this time. The council's strategic priorities was extend out to 2028. And I don't remember where it is when in the exact year, but I know it's a few years off before we have it.
Probably not in our lifetime, Tom.
Speak for yourself.
I've been around for a long time.
So 2028.
Well, I don't know that our strategic plans, you know, go out that far. A lot of things we've had to shift because of the provincial legislation around housing and the impact that's having on our resources.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was bringing you guys dry, huh?
It's a huge time.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, it's an old match.
But I can look and see when it is slated on that list. It is on the list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was the only thing. It's just you've got an urban forest management plan. It doesn't even refer to the heritage forest. Like, talk about social, economic, ecological values. Probably should have something in there. So, okay. Town insurance coverage. We spoke about that a little bit. And so
how, just kind of a review, because it's been 6 months. I had, I think it was Bernie, pull the town insurance policy. And so long as the town has endorsed the event, the volunteer event, this is about Brown Property Preservation Society volunteers and how do we get insurance coverage. It's mostly expensive. Our membership fee is $5 a year. And, you know, if we were to take on a policy, it'd be very expensive. So the idea was, can we slip into the town policy? Yes, we can, provided it's a town-endorsed event, which I always make a point of bringing it to the commission. This is what we want to do. It's approved, therefore it's endorsed. And the town is present on the day up, which works for, say, shipping, because the guys are driving the tractor, they're there with us, swinging chips around. The chipping program, I mean, for sure the town's there for that. But the question was, what about if we're doing an English Ivy poll? Or, you know, something that doesn't necessarily involve the town. Excuse me, I noticed in any of the town events now, Lynette or, you know, whoever it is, has a form for us to sign. Everybody that shows up signs the form. And I think in terms of liability-wise, by signing the form, hey, if you haven't signed the form and you're claiming later that you had an accident or something, well, where's your name on the list, right? Anyway, so we just weren't sure how to deal with it. And you had suggested as a possibility that if we were going to do an English Ivy poll on a Saturday or something like that, that you might actually come out and be that town representative.
Right.
Does that work?
Yeah, and I don't know how often you're doing this.
Once a year.
Once a year, yeah. But, I mean, the English Ivy poll, sure, but other things. So, I mean, clear said, I definitely, if I'm available, I can use it.
Okay.
It's just coordinating, and I'm sure you do this, like, well in advance. You to coordinate all your volunteers, so it's not like, hey, tomorrow we're going for English Ivy.
No.
So, definitely, I offer that for myself. I would say, clearly, though, as you said, that we do need a staff person in attendance. Otherwise, our insurance doesn't apply. So, it's plus maybe that works somehow.
Yeah, well, okay, great. Thank you very much. Because it's really, I try to set it up for that kind of a thing, like a once a year, because people ask me, oh, when are we going to do something? Come on, you know, well, you know, we need stuff to do for one thing, you know. Well, that would be great.
And if it's not myself, we also have on the weekends park staff as well as public works staff doing other things. And public works, for instance, first thing in the morning, they have to go inspect the airport. Then they go around town to pick up garbage. So if the ID poll doesn't start until, say, 10 or 11 in the morning or even later, then they could possibly attend that as well.
Okay.
That way they could be out there for a couple hours and I could be there. We'll try to make it work.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks very much. We can figure something out.
So on part of the society, presumably you would want to have an attendance record. If somebody came later and made a claim, you would want to know who was there and verify it.
Yeah. Right. So we should be signing a piece of paper saying who's present. Like, Lynette or Georgette or whoever's there, I know what town they're. They're now very kind of strict about that. And so, like yesterday, I signed a form saying that I was present, basically. We should do that with the society.
And it is to protect the person as much as the child. Because the person was there, they hurt themselves, but didn't realize it for several days later, and then they try to make a claim. We don't have any record that you're in attendance, unfortunately. So the claim was to be denied by our insurance provider.
Okay. Yeah, so we're gonna have to kind of work with this, because it's really expensive to take out insurance, like say for the society, and our $15 for 3 year membership.
Yeah. So this is not a waiver. It's just an attendance.
You're present.
You're present.
That's it. You're here.
Yeah. Now, would people necessarily have to sign, or can they can the person in charge simply make a record?
Well, I don't know. I noticed with the town, they're having a sign. Mm-hmm. I noticed the last time I was out with Lynette, she had me sign, and I noticed nobody else. So I don't want that. As a director, I don't want to be the only person to sign that piece of paper. So I think going forward, we're having this conversation about insurance. I want to make sure that I'm covered, too. Mm-hmm. And because the director's insurance is really expensive. Right. Some clubs won't get directors unless they have director's insurance. But I kind of look at it like, physically, like an English Ivy poll, you know, once a year, you're out there with your snippers. I mean, should be fairly safe.
Should be.
Unless you're physically capable of being there in the first place. You know, should be all right. But anyway, I think we need to kind of be a little bit careful with this.
Assuming our heritage forests have less cougars than Royal Rose. wildlife could not be somebody like hurting or cutting their fingers, but it could be whatever it is, whether a dog attacks them, whether somebody's unattended dog or whatever,
a branch falls.
Exactly. Right.
But see, a person could be walking on the trail, using that example, and get attacked by a cougar.
Our insurance doesn't cover that because they're just a person out there walking, but if they're doing volunteer work,
that's different?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I hope we can continue doing volunteer work because we contribute a lot. Like if I get 20 people out for free for half a day,
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And that's a huge cost savings to Town of Quality Beach. So I hope we can keep this going.
Well, this insurance system that we're talking about seems to me to be pretty straightforward. All people have to do is to sign that they're present.
Yeah. If
there's somebody from the town present there. It seems like it's already worked out without complicating things any more than that.
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're good. So we have any cougars going through lately? Like I haven't seen one around my street for 2 years.
Speaking of Ryan, the consultant that was out last week with FireSmart, he thought he might have seen a cougar. He didn't say anything when we went through the first time. He just was kind of quiet. And when we looped around and we came back the other time, he kind of went off and he was kind of looking around and said, what are you looking at? He said, I think I saw a brown tail.
Hope he did.
Just even back then. Yeah, right. And so he's looking around and really. So anyway.
My neighbors had one watching them probably 3 years ago now, but it was in the field, and it was like low down, just watching them go by. It was no problem. But then I called the town, and they put a sign up right away for people to keep their eyes open, you know, like pick up Fifi, yeah, that sort of thing. Maybe your kids, too, if you treasure them.
Oh, your dog and your kids, one of them.
That's great.
I forgot
two hands. Two dogs and one kid.
So the wolf dog has shown up in Heritage Forest yet?
No. Okay. No, well, not that I'm aware of. Anything.
Speaking of, there might be a second one, they think.
Mm-hmm.
Just the sightings and timing of
them. Yeah, they were basing it on the color, apparently. Like, one's very much darker.
Yeah.
So, but it's just plain getting stupid. Really, because you get people trying to feed the poor thing, and then, you know, and then there's others that go ahead, feed them, bring them into the area, we're going to shoot. It's kind of sad all around, really.
Speaking with a veterinary friend of mine a couple of days ago, my background is in wildlife ecology, right? So here you have a situation where somebody is feeding this critter on a regular basis, establishing a relationship with it. Why not slip up a little bit of sedative?
Yeah, that's right. Not that
I don't know the organization looks after work dogs. It just strikes me there's a pretty easy solution to this.
Give them a nap temporarily.
Yeah, that doesn't involve a bow and arrow.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's very strange. It's strange that it's actually managed to keep away from people this long. I think that's one clever animal. You know? It's been months, hasn't it? Really? 4 months? Something.
Well, now we understand why, if it's established a relationship with somebody who's feeding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I said it's smart.
It hasn't been seen in the Heritage Forest anyway, thankfully.
All right. That was a diversion. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'm just watching the clock. soil flow, Beach Creek. So that's the one on the fourth fairway. So the town approach is a wait and see. Has there been any, with your waiting and seeing, has there been any changes?
Aside from waiting and seeing, what we're doing is actually, because it seems very benign when you say it that way, we're actually monitoring it. So we put in, basically survey casts out there, and we're going to continue to survey them to see how fast it's moving and where it's moving. I mean, it's obviously going down towards the creek, but.
Is that what those stakes are?
We had stakes out originally to monitor them. They're just little casts in the ground so they don't get disturbed by people, but golfing. So we generally what we'll do is go out initially every couple months, and if it's really not moving quickly, then you go every 6 months and then once a year type of thing just to monitor it and see. Because it is quite a distance away from the creek. So, I mean, from a disturbance to the creek perspective, I'm not that concerned, but until we can actually monitor it for at least 6 months, you can't say that. So that's what we're trying to do is monitor it. And if it is moving quickly, then look at what that impact might be and bring in our biologist as well as a hydrogeologist and that's to talk to them about what can we do to either stabilize it. And to me, that would probably look more like little stakes, something like that, planting them just to use vegetation to stabilize it if we can. Because I don't think water is the issue because the runoff, like at the golf course, there's not a whole big slope putting water on that slope, so it shouldn't be too much water in that area. Aside from obviously all winter we were getting. So it could be just the slope trying to stabilize to its normal kind of
equilibrium.
Yeah. And that being the case, we can figure out what that is. And unfortunately what happens is every like spring and winter if you get big storms and it's washing at the toe. And then it'll just keep filling that toe, it'll keep sliding into it. So that's why we're monitoring it.
Okay, thank you. Heritage Forest brochure, we spoke about that a little bit already. That's coming and with a new map with Beach Creek and its tributaries identified, new photographs.
And will the photographer's name be in there for
yeah.
credits?
Good. Yeah.
Good advertising for her.
Yeah. Well, she's an individual. It's like she's just a person, but she's an amazing photographer. On that, just last night I went live with the new heritageforest.ca website and have added a photo gallery page and about 85 photographs in there. Wildlife, flora, fungi, trees, and volunteers. And I created an Instagram account years ago, but when I speak to the elderly population in Qualica Beach, they go, oh my God, social media? It's scary, don't want to go there. So it's become what's known as a dead zone. There we go. Okay, fine. Let's do something with the website. I think you're going to like it. It's, I think it looks pretty damn cool. And so anyway, if you go, I went live last night and, so you'll see a new tab across the top called Photo Gallery. Have a look. You might even see yourself in there. okay, so the brochure, so that's done. Bylaw 699. Have you guys seen that?
No.
Do you know what this is?
Nope. On what? Maybe I haven't.
No, it is the number. Heritage Forest Reserve Bylaw 699.
I don't know. You probably might have written it.
Well, we did this in 2015. And it was Gordon Davidson had me over to do a talk at Probus. Probably about a couple of weeks ago. And then Gord got a hold of me afterward and asked if there was any kind of a way to leave money to the Heritage Forest. And, well, there wasn't, but there is now. And so bylaw 699. So I sent this around to all the local law firms in December. That was on my list. Give a little explanation with this attached.
And so they're all aware, because they probably weren't aware that this even existed. Well, lo and behold, Gordon just died. And he was in our Wednesday paper.
Oh.
And there he is. And so there will be, without saying how much, a significant portion of money going to the town. And so deal with that, just so we're aware here, is that the way the bylaw's been written is, so there was a lot of discussion, like 2015, about, well, we don't want those money to go to fix potholes. We want the money to go specifically for the Heritage Forest. And so the bylaw is really clear. It states that any use of those funds run by the commission, and there'll be a discussion about how those funds are spent. So there we go. Just after three.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So what was his last name?
Davidson.
Davidson.
Yeah, interesting guy. And he was all about that Heritage Forest. Another person just passed away. I went to his funeral last week. That was Don Kelly. And Don was very instrumental in the fundraising way back when.
Hmm.
And anyway, so there is a provision for people to leave funds.
I think that's great, because there's a lot of people around that have, you know, family, and they want to find something worthy.
It's good. Absolutely. And so, again, the monies get earmarked for whatever use the Heritage Forest Commission approves, basically. That is, it's not just going to fix potholes or whatever.
I think it was on my list to talk to Lou about that, too, and how do we get the word out. But I think I did that, but I'll revisit that and make sure.
Okay.
There may be a way, you know, on the town's website or whatever,
yeah,
to... That's a good idea. And town sightings, even. Yeah.
Is it on the Heritage Society's website as well?
Well, I thought about that. And at a certain point with a website, like, there's too much, right?
Just busy.
It gets busy and kind of complicated. And so no, it's not. It's and I thought about, like, even a little one-liner or something, but is that kind of self-promoting? Like, I don't know. I kind of...
What's not to like about self-promoting?
I think it's educational. It's so people would know. Because right now, most people wouldn't even know.
Yeah.
So even if they, Heritage Society were on the site, and then potentially with the funds, you could even have a website with pictures of all the great work that was done with previous donations. Anyway.
Is there a section on the site of, you know, how to support the work in the forest? And
well, yeah, I've got membership stuff.
Yeah, so you can keep it as something on there, too. Because if you're relying solely on the town's website, like, talk about complex and overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, try to find something.
I can do, you know, that would be less likely for someone to stumble across it there. Like, just throw that out there. Like, maybe if someone's like, wow, this Heritage Forest is amazing, go to your website and know how to support it. Oh, make a donation, join, put this in will, right?
Yeah. And even if you're physically unable to volunteer on both, then at least you can donate.
Okay. Contacting the lawyers was a very good idea, because I ran across the same thing with a children's hospital down in Victoria, which I helped with. And the lawyers were just glass. The ones I dealt with were happy to have some paperwork. It's the people sitting in their waiting room trying to think of ways to donate.
Mm-hmm.
So jump on that.
Well, they all got notified in December, basically. Okay. Other effective areas conservation measure. Okay, on that, we had a meeting with the group, kind of a broad group, great group, at the Tranmere, February 13th. I'm meeting with Adam Walker and Graham Sackey tomorrow at Adam's office. And you remember we had a motion, and it has been adopted by the council to designate the Heritage Forest as either an other effective areas conservation measure or a protected area. It's coming out that
the heritage forest, because we have a conservation covenant and we have a management plan that speaks very specifically to biodiversity, it perfectly meets the criteria of a protected area. Other effective areas are, you could have a military base that has a provision for biodiversity. You could have a First Nation Indian Reserve that has a provision for biodiversity. Well, that would fit the OECM. But in terms of the heritage forest, it's a slam dunk for a protected area. And why do this? International recognition. Yes, like there will be a map eventually of, well, there is now, but we're not on it yet, of protected areas around the world. And this is all going towards that 30% biodiversity protected on land and marine by the year 2030. On that, our number currently within the Mount Arrowsmith Biosphere Reserve area, terrestrial, that's 2.5. Only.
Out of 30.
Out of 30. And, well, and marine is 3.7. So we got a ways to go. And so the meeting that I have tomorrow with Adam Walker and Graham, for instance, the Heritage Forest is going to get designated as a protected area. There's 50 acres added to the 2.5%. What about, so there's three areas in Qualico Beach that are currently zoned conservation that don't require any zoning amendment. So there's the Heritage Forest, there's Milner Gardens, and there's Granny Creek. All three of those are currently zoned conservation. Now, it would be fairly easy to move those forward towards either an OECM or a protected area. Milner would probably be an OECM because they're all about, their main mandate is, you know, public education and the gardens and all that kind of thing. But Grandin would actually be a protected area. Nobody's going to build on it. Like that strip of like town green space, that would be an easy one. So I'm just bringing that up here, especially for Ann and Luke.
It is on the radar. So Tufts of Stiffy brought it up during strategic planning. And at first it was on the schedule for an outer year, like 2027 or something like that. And Tufts of Stiffy said, well, in the case of the Heritage Forest, another organization has done all the heavy lifting. You know, the town just has to say, sure, sign us up. So the latest direction from council is it's in an outer year. However, if another organization comes forward to do all the work and all council has to say is sure, sign us up, then it'll get advanced sooner than that. So that's where it stands right now.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah. So bring it on, Tom.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because it's easy. Like those, now I don't know about Milner, because Ann, you mentioned that in the strategic plan, there was no mention of this, but that could be amended, right? And see, why do it? Well, we've got this 30% protected biodiversity by the year 2030, and that's an altruistic thing. But we've got this international recognition aspect of it, which I think would be a selling feature for both Milner and the town of, you know, being part of this global, well, provincial, federal, and global initiative. Just a good thing. And so on that, Mavry has a mandate. They have a budget for this. And so that's what I like about it, is that's their job, basically. And so anyway, so that's where I thought, well, let's get together with Graham right away. And Adam had a little chit-chat with Adam about it, and he's all about it. So I think we can probably get something going on this. But those are the three that don't require
every zoning.
Yeah.
Because the other two that we were talking about were the well fields, but they would have to be rezoned.
Yeah. So the agricultural.
Yeah, they're different zonings.
Yeah.
Rural or whatever right now.
Yeah. And the other one was DL-10. And I'm thinking about that's a big one. It's zones.
A1.
How difficult is it to do an amendment? So that won't get developed, you wouldn't think. It's down there in the floodplain. It's really hard to get out. They couldn't log it, or they would have.
Well, we bought the logging rights for part of it, and some of it was logged, and it's all alders.
Yeah.
So I think actually it would be a really good location to do a managed forest, to come up with a plan on how do we create a more biodiverse area in the bottom part. But and then on the other side of the river, it is like pristine. It hasn't been touched, and that's where the big thick spruce is and whatnot. So.
Because, yeah, Dale 10 is on both sides, right?
Yes.
Where the walking trail goes up on the east side, and then the west side is where the giant thicket spruce is.
Yeah.
Would there be an appetite for Dale 10, like, to do something like that?
Absolutely.
But it's right now, it's slated for 2028, unless something comes along or there's something changes and there's more time or resources.
Yeah, in my opinion, I would prioritize this one in particular over the others because, as Councilor Skipsy mentioned, the forest is reaching its natural kind of end of life, or a lot of the trees are. So there's an opportunity. It seems, I'm not a forestry expert, but there to support the transition to a more long-term forest, you know, that could sequester carbon and deal with those things. So I would love to see a management plan kind of in that respect, right? Kind of like what there's some people advancing that in the Grand Creek area, right? You know, like to accelerate the process of the homes coming down and establishing, you know, conifers that are more long-term climax forests, right? So I think that there's a huge opportunity at DL10 and the management plan could help.
Okay. So we've got four possibles there.
Were there any actions required with respect to the OECM for heritage forest?
Done. We put a motion forward a while ago, a few meetings ago, to mayor and council to accept the possibility of being designated as an OECM or a TA, and mayor and council approved it and bring the letter. Well, actually, I did bring the letter.
There's the letter, all right?
And so that's happening, and it's ticking all the boxes. Mabry, again, has employees and funds for staffing, and the Heritage Forest is just ticking all the boxes. So Heritage Forest is going forward, basically, as a protected area. We thought originally as an OECM, but it's a slam dunk for a protected area because we have a management plan. We've got a conservation covenant. It's all about biodiversity. We don't have to change anything. And its sole purpose is wildlife sanctuary, ecological function, biodiversity. So like it's perfect for FDA. So that one's happening. And the final ticking of the boxes or whatever it is they're doing will come in November of this year, and it will get approved in January of 2025. Huh. Right? And it'll show up on the map. Huh. And that kind of stuff. Let's see what we can get going on some of these other areas there. Okay. Super. Okay. Forest maintenance. Update on forest management. And, okay, so we've got a few things on forest management. I organized 24 KSS students on February 6th, and it was the culverts coming out of Beach Creek at East Crescent. And so I was over there with Oliver. We were talking about the map, and we got talking about this. And so anyway, I had the kids there. And we transplanted 30 clumps of sword fern from the Heritage Forest side, so where that culvert is, over to the grassy meadow on the west side. And they were really happy to do it. They're always excited to do that. And that's Ben Leggett with the Rome's project at KFS. And anyway, I'm back out on Earth Day, April 22nd, with Ben's class, as well as a class from Bolinas this year, and as well as Qualicum Elementary School kindergarten class. We'll have about 50 kids out there for Granite Creek. Is that okay? It's on town property.
Do we need a town staff person now? Would that be...
Now their insurance covers themselves because it's moving.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
that will have their own interest. Okay.
That's good later.
But
yeah, I do think that that's probably something that council should certainly be aware of and maybe endorse. So, maybe you can give that detail to Councilor Gibbsy and you can bring it forward in your reports just to have a formal recognition of that work.
Okay. All right, that's April 22nd. All right, but it'll be this year, Bolinas and KSS and the kindergarten kids. And I've ordered trees, and 540 trees, Adam Walker's paying for it. For his office in Canada. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's good. And again, Brandt Festival, I'm doing a couple of tours, April 7th, April 8th, maximum 10 people. And I did it last year for the Brandt Festival and got approval for it. Do we need to make a motion to do that?
Well, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah? So. Okay.
Well, I think it's already in the management plan. It's like the
public education.
Yeah.
See, that's the
answer. Right. I feel like that one is covered off by that and it's so small, right?
Yeah.
Okay. With larger groups.
Yeah, it was 50 kids, I think, feels a little more substantial. Right, that's really great. Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying like that, the scale of effort.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so we're probably okay there. We're probably okay then for the BC Nature AGM. When they ask me, I say, well, listen, you're going to have to keep that to less than 10 because it's that quiet enjoyment of nature mandate. In the conservation cabinet, so small groups, not a lot of groups, and so BC Nature has two forest bathing groups, and then Perry Taylor is giving a talk and a walk of the Hedges Forest, but all of those three are less than 10. Same thing again, probably okay?
I think so, yeah, I'll do that as well.
Okay. Okay, so the okay, I think in terms of forest maintenance stuff, the new business, a few things to cover in new business. Okay, I think that's probably good for that. Under new business, relocation of the little Myosis bat houses, Brian Public Works did move them. They're down now on the end of Chester Road. Much better location for them. It was too hot and dry and sunny where they were. That was the idea. And so down on the end of Chester, it's partially shady. But I talked to the neighbors back on the Beach Creek, and they see bats regularly in the summertime flying up and down. That's where the food source is. Probably should have put them there in the first place, but wasn't sufficient. So that's done. That's terrific. Control of invasive squirrel population.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I sent this out to everybody, or Brandy had sent it out to everybody.
Yes.
And, so we have a resident red squirrel population in the Heritage Forest. And we talked about this about 10 years ago here. And because of the conservation covenant, we've got a mandate for native species only, not specific to mammals or plants or fungi or whatever, but just native only. And we do have a red squirrel population in there. The blacks and grays were introduced to Victoria, you know, way, way back when, and they've come all the way up the island. People feed them at the backyard feeders. I see them running back and forth on Hemsworth. I see them running back and forth on St. Andrews. There's specific houses that feed the squirrels.
There's one on McQuinnah Place that feeds squirrels, and they come over and they put them all in my yard.
But they're very aggressive. They eat songbird eggs. They will kill the young of red squirrels. And so at what point does it become not okay for the heritage forest that has this conservation covenant that clearly states native species only and invasives we get rid of? So at what point do we tip over the line and suggest that maybe we consider, you know, there's rodent control people. They would live trap, they would put the traps inside the fence on Hemsworth, and they would put the trap in the heritage forest over on St. Andrews. Like, there's really specific places where they're being fed by the houses there. It'd be very easy to trap them. The problem with the squirrels is you don't trap them and let them go someplace else. You exterminate them, right? And so that's kind of the question is, there is this resident red squirrel population there for now. Do we have an appetite to do something with the black and gray squirrel populations that are coming into the forest from these adjacent homes?
I think we've already lost a good chunk of the red squirrel population because they used to be all through my yard, and now once in a while I'll see one, but mostly I see gray and black.
So here's a question for you. Would you be willing to set up a trap and knock off black and grays?
I'm not very good at that, but I might designate someone to do it.
This is just a bit of a test from a kind of a public opinion standpoint.
No, it's hard.
And there are issues around the European hares around town. You've experienced this before. So if we were to recommend action in and around the heritage forest, what type of pushback might we get from the public? What's your experience?
So the town has done rabbit control in years past, and I remember when council first brought it up and introduced it, we were expecting, you know, to be on the front page of every paper and people would be up in arms, and it was quiet. No one, not a single complaint. And so we ran rabbit control for probably 7 years, and you know, hired a trapper. They don't get relocated either. But even the Wildlife Recovery Center doesn't want rabbits.
No, they don't.
No.
They don't. They'll feed them to something.
No, they don't.
They don't. They won't even get their owls a break.
Yeah. Okay.
So are there any provincial regulations, wildlife regulations, governing black squirrels?
I don't know.
That's something to take a look at.
Yeah, I know that rabbits are the same as rodents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not you can't relocate them legally, and you can't.
No, and they have to be trapped, not poisoned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some places are starting to introduce birth control for gray squirrels, like it's actually becoming quite
expensive. Go to the special feeder.
Yeah.
How expensive is that? Like, how is that?
I don't know. I read an article about it. I mean, this is topical because we're not the only community that's realizing that they're studying it.
Except that doesn't stop the red squirrels from eating their food. Like, maybe you're going to put everybody on birth control.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that out.
Well, territorial, though. Like, the black and grays are really aggressive.
Okay, so they'll eat the red away, so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, don't kill them.
Yeah.
Where are the red squirrel habitat is? It's very interesting. It's right in the middle of the loop trail.
Hmm.
It's right in the middle of that loop. And I thought, yes, the bald eagle nest is right there. There's barn owls like crazy flying around. The only thing I can think of is that, but there's really a tangle of salmonberry in there.
Hmm.
So maybe that gives them enough
protection from height or swooping eagles and, I don't know. And it's right where we covered up that trail last fall. That's right there. So the trail that we covered up with all that debris will be additional cover for the red squirrels. But that's where they live. That's their territory.
Well, it seems to me that the black and grays actually live in
their
residential properties.
Near the feeders.
Near the feeders.
Because they're there constantly. Mm-hmm.
But if somebody stops feeding them, it doesn't stop them from moving in inwards.
No, but if you were going to set up traps.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
So we make a motion to Mayor and Council to get the rodent person out and trap
green squirrels.
I don't know, you talked about it 10 years ago and decided not to touch it. We just thought 10 years ago or whatever it was, a long time ago, that it was kind of, well, we had a whole lot of stuff going on, right? Now we're kind of getting down to...
I think it would be good if we have, like, the supporting information for council, not just the, the motion, but the reasoning behind it, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
So, well, but what about the brochure from the province of British Columbia?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Along with a motion.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be smart?
Yeah, good thing, I suppose. And I think just that, and that the fact that there is the native species only, that's our, like, the mandate, or, yeah.
From the Conservation Covenant.
Yeah.
So, Tom, this is kind of my arena, the wild background. Why don't you and I sit down and just take a look at the various materials, maybe do an investigation of what other municipalities have done with respect to their conservation areas, and maybe come up with recommendations, something for discussion for our next meeting in May, and then move forward from there to a recommendation for council.
Would you be happy to take that on as a project?
With you.
Or
with you, yeah. Well, that's okay. It's just to be, you serve me a glass of wine, the other day, it might cost you.
Right? Okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I think I would feel better about that if there's a well thought out.
Yeah.
And we've looked at maybe even the costing of it or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, we'll report back in May.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I'm happy to do a written report as well.
Okay, great.
Committee.
I sit on a lot of committees.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great.
Okay,
let's do that.
So Tom, sorry, the handout there, I was just looking online and you see that Eastern squirrel basically can be captured, killed anywhere, any time.
Oh, good.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Fair game. All right, it does suggest that it doesn't necessarily have to be the town or the society that's taking the action. Maybe we can engage residents in the area with an awareness campaign. And, there's a whole bunch of things that could be done.
Well, but the rat control people who I used to deal with in real estate, I mean, they've got traps. It's quite a sophisticated thing, like their timing and the number of times they come back. And, like, I think we're probably going to find that it would need to be a professional, not you and I, going out there setting traps.
I agree.
I assume one of the concerns would be bycatch, whether it's catching the little red squirrels, because you don't want to release them quickly.
They could be released. Like, they have a hard trap, so don't kill the animal. They're for release, but you could euthanize them.
But again, the blacks and the grays, like, they control the perimeter, because that's where the household feeders are.
Right.
And maybe that's why the reds are kind of right in the middle of that forest, maybe. They've been beat back so many times. Okay. We'll figure something out. Okay. So, new business, heritage forest upkeeping. We've actually dealt with a bunch of things. The one, though, is that very orange water in the tributary. So, okay, just a little bit about it. I was scouting out areas
Holly and invasives and stuff like that, didn't realize that this reservoir, this concrete reservoir, was there on the tributary, right in behind the Crown Mansion. And it turns out that Mrs. Brown, apparently, was concerned about sediment, soil sediment, and that kind of stuff. Anyway, it's quite a concrete bunker. It's quite an elaborate little structure in there. It's like, oh my God, look at this thing. And the water is very orange. The substrate is very orange. There's probably a pipe in there somewhere. It's quite a tangle of salmon burying. Like, it's not just easy to kind of get in there. But when you look at the downstream, it's bright orange. And so because it is an anadromous fish stream, i.e. cold salmon and cutthroat trout, should we take a look at it?
Is that tank thing on the Brown property, or is that on the Heritage Forest property?
It's in the Heritage Forest, which used to be the Brown property, right?
Can it be removed?
Well, but the concrete isn't the issue. There's probably a metal pipe there somewhere.
So we can remove the pipe, and perhaps?
Maybe.
It's that orange, though, I'm curious, because it wouldn't, like, the pipe would release a little bit as it rusts, because it's just iron rusting.
Yeah.
But we do have deposits of iron around town, where you do get areas, like, for instance, in Arbor Crest, where some of the ditches are just red. Or the pipes, when we clean them, we have to clean them, because the rust builds up at the bottoms of the pipes. That's just naturally occurring.
The top of Arbutus is the same. It is red, but when you go above the reservoir, it's not red.
Because, when they built the reservoir, they could have dumped down and then basically
put him on
where that iron deposit is, and then now it's water getting dumped there and washing it through type of thing.
Could we go for a walk sometime?
Yeah.
Go have a peek? Because that could very well be, and I was thinking it could be just natural, but it is odd that when you go upstream of that, it's clear.
And the water itself is actually orange too.
Well, I mean,